The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus went to the Mount of Olives, but early in the morning he arrived again in the temple area, and all the people started coming to him, and he sat down and taught them. Then the scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery and made her stand in the middle. They said to him, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. Now, in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. So what do you say?" They said this to test him, so that they could have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and began to write on the ground with his finger. But when they continued asking him, he straightened up and said to them, "Let the one among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." Again he bent down and wrote on the ground. And in response, they went away one by one, beginning with the elders. So he was left alone with the woman before him. Then Jesus straightened up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She replied, "No one, sir." Then Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, do not sin anymore." The Gospel of the Lord. My homily is going to be a little bit longer tonight than it normally is, just because I think I've got some important stuff I want to say. So be patient, please. I think it's like maybe even 4 minutes longer than normal. Over the years, I've often spoken about how I think my generation missed out on learning about faith. Catechesis at the time had failed. We had all we did our own thing at Catholic schools, but when we got home on the weekends, we had to memorize the Baltimore Catechism, and we would have these tests on Sunday morning after Sunday Mass. The purpose of this, I guess, or the reason that this was a failure, is it was simply a lack of resources. Vatican II happened when I was 4 years old, and the media in 1965 is not what it is today. That's an understatement, right? Vatican II texts were not translated until years later. So opinions and spin were already well established. Everyone had an opinion about it without knowing it, especially in the area of liturgical reform, because of liturgical abuses that were being done in the name of Vatican II. I remember when I was a kid, we had a clown mass at school. This was a Catholic school. Priest dressed up like a clown. We had balloons taped to the pews. There was all this experimentation that was going on. And so church and social politics of the 60s, combined with a lack of source documents, was a perfect recipe for disaster. There was a vacuum of information equal to the one at the time of Martin Luther in the 1500s. Nobody knew what was going on. There was only hearsay. And we don't know what we don't know. So now, some 60 years later, how many of you have read documents of Vatican II? It was probably the most profound reform in the history of the church. Reform, not change. But because no one knew the history of the 1500s, what came before Vatican II, or what Vatican II was about, it just seemed like major change. In recent years, we see division in the church now over Pope Francis, who is simply trying to reintroduce the world to what happened at Vatican II. In the same way, however, those who seek to control the narrative about him are shaping the outcomes of popular opinion of a church that largely hasn't bothered to read anything that he has written. It's always quicker to read someone's review of a document than to read the actual document. Unfortunately, all you are left with is someone's interpretation of Pope Francis, uncertain of their motives. Opinions are formed without any basis in fact or knowledge of the Pope's real intentions, and the news media has proven not to be helpful. Pope Francis demands reform in all areas of the Church. This is not easy because we always prefer to be content with what is familiar. Reform is demanding, and it means that we have to change. It was the same with the scribes and the Pharisees in Jesus' day. Jesus is demanding change of hearts to reform his creation. So in the gospel today, Jesus' life is in danger because he was calling out the hypocrisy, corruption, manipulation, and clericalism of the Pharisees. He was threatening their status quo, and they were angry enough to kill him. All sorts of things are going on in today's gospel that are unlawful. The woman, Jesus acknowledges, is guilty as charged. I do want to say, though, it does take two to commit adultery, doesn't it? So where's the man? I think that this whole thing was a setup. They set her up in order not really to have justice for her, but to try to destroy Jesus. She was a person with no dignity at all. His response was completely not according to the law books. She should be stoned, shouldn't she, according to the law of Moses? What she did was not right, but what they were doing was far worse. Jesus' response is completely different than any foreseen response. He is silent. They had no idea what to do with this, and they left. This is the kind of thing I imagine Pope Francis doing. The point of the scene was this. No one present had the role of being her judge, not even Jesus. As I said before, reform is not change for its own sake. Things need to change to be corrected, preserved, not destroyed. So back to Vatican II. The reform of Vatican II actually was a turning back to the first centuries of the Church, but especially the time before so many changes were made and the crisis that was caused by the Protestant Reformation in 1517, when the Church made changes in reaction to Protestantism. Martin Luther wanted, and this is something a lot of people don't know, Martin Luther wanted the Catholic Church to restore the importance of the Word of God at Mass. Its importance had become minimized. Preaching was optional and did not have to be about the scriptures of the day at all, which were proclaimed in Latin, by the way. Most people actually attended what they called low mass, and the scriptures were read silently, only by the priest. Luther wanted the church to acknowledge that humans could not earn salvation by their own acts. Good works cannot buy heaven. But the salvation came only by God's freely given grace. These were the original teachings of St. Augustine himself, and Martin Luther was an Augustinian priest. He wanted to restore communion under both forms. He wanted the Mass to be celebrated in the local language, the vernacular. The Council of Trent, 50 years later, established the Mass, which was in use until Vatican II, which denied all of these things simply because the Protestants wanted them, not because they wanted people to be clear. Oh, they wanted people just simply to be clear what was Catholic and what was not. If it isn't in Latin, it isn't Catholic. The Church was actively discussing all of these reforms before Martin Luther's protest started the schism. In 1960, the overwhelming majority of Catholics had never even read the Bible or owned one. Do you think this needs to change? For most Catholics, personal reading of the Bible was something only Protestants did. But among Catholic theologians and pastors, there had developed a renewed interest in the Bible in the 20th century. In 1943, Pope Pius XII encouraged the production of new translations from the original languages, not from the medieval English. This led to a pastoral attempt to get ordinary Catholics to rediscover the Bible, to read it, and to make it a source for their spiritual life. This found a response in very limited circles in the 40s and 50s. By 1960, it was still in its infancy. We still have a lot of work to do on this. So listen to the beauty of the words God places in the heart of the prophet Isaiah in the first reading. Remember not the events of the past, the things of long ago, consider not. See, I am doing something new. See how it springs up. Do you not see it? God did not make our land a wasteland, but he is reforming it. Reform requires us to change, and change is difficult, especially when we might settle for things as bad as they might be, because they could get worse. So let us look around immediately around us. Are we where we need to be spiritually? How is it with your soul? Does anything need to change? Look around our families, our church, our society, our neighborhoods. Can anyone look around and say, it's all good, we're fine? No further change is needed. What about our country, our world, with never before seen records of people fleeing from danger and violence and wars on several continents, poverty, suffering, famine, disease, war? How much condemnation do we all deserve for this world we find ourselves in? No one person or faction can solve this. We must turn to none other than Christ himself, who in his pure mercy desires nothing but the reform that is necessary for us and for our salvation. Mercy, not condemnation. We hope to hear Jesus say, "Neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, do not sin anymore." At this moment in the unconditional love and mercy of Jesus, the woman in the gospel realizes her dignity for the first time, maybe the first time in her whole life. It's not something that she has had to earn or determine. It was something that was given to her, to all of us by God, since the foundation of the world and activated in our baptism.